got to roll with the punches. Yeah, you got to go with the flow. Roll with the punches.
Yeah, you got to roll with the punches. Hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan. Welcome back to Hibernian Radio. Brought to you by Local 150, Sheehy Funeral Home, Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, Fox's Pizza, Flood Brothers, and Guinness. Guinness is good for you. We're back here at the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, 10614 Southwestern Avenue. You can catch the show every Saturday night from 7 to 8 at 1240 a.m. WSBC. Or usually up, the podcast usually up at hibernianradio.org by Sunday night, Monday morning at the latest. We're here tonight, back on a cold, snowy winter night here at the Cork. Got a great bunch of people here tonight, and they're all here to see Jimmy Gorman. Jimmy, welcome to the show. Yeah! And I got to tell you, Jimmy, you got a lot of fans out there. Because on Facebook and on the phone, people are just saying, oh, he's a great guy. He's one of my friends, blah, blah, blah. So
I did a lot of those.
But here's one guy. You may not even remember him. Tommy McDonald, who was an old friend of mine, a Carmel guy. He's in New Orleans right now, but he called me. He saw, you know, you saw the email blast we did.
Yeah.
T-Dog calls me and goes, you got Jimmy Gorman on the show? He was good friends with your mom and dad. And he told a story about your dad was a precinct captain?
Grandpa was, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, your grandpa. And he went in to vote, or his mother went in to vote one day, and he followed her in.
He did. Yeah. That was Frank Quinn, yeah.
She goes, hey, get out of here. She kicks him out. Only in Chicago.
Right.
Anyway, Tommy was a substitute teacher at St. Cajetan's when you were a kid.
Mm.
And he said, you guys were merciless to him. But he wanted me to say hi. So that's from Tommy T. Dog. Okay, so you've been a fireman since 2004, and we'll get to that. But St. Cajetan's, grew up in Cajetan's, right? Big cop family, fireman family.
Yeah.
What's the load on?
Mostly
that?
Cop.
Yeah.
We seven kids, nine people in a house, one bathroom.
Oh, I had seven kids in my. Where are you in
I
the
I still
line?
Go really fast. I can get in and out of the bathroom really fast. I'm third.
Third, okay.
Yeah. We went to Cajun's, and the girls went to Macaulay, and the boys split between Rita and Carmel. Carmel kids couldn't get into Rita.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
Used to do a bit about growing up in a house with seven kids, nine people, about the bathroom, and it was, we had nine people and only two or one, a one seat.
Right.
And so you'd be in line outside the bathroom and going, come on, hurry up, I got to pee like a river. Hence, river dance was invented at my house.
Right.
Anyway, so where'd you went to Rita?
Yeah, right. Yeah. My father was a policeman. His father was a cop. Uncles were cops.
Okay.
Three brothers, yeah, teachers.
And then out of Rita, you went in the Navy?
I did. I worked. I was bouncing around for a little while. Went to college. Didn't give that a lot of effort. Had a great time, but... St. Ambrose for a while out there.
Oh, sure. And the Norbertine fathers in Prairie. Is it
right.
Prairie du Chien?
It's in Davenport there. That
oh,
one,
okay. Oh, Davenport,
yeah.
Iowa.
Right.
Yeah.
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 And didn't last long. I was kindly asked to leave. And then I was laboring for a while, and I was just working a job, and right across the street was the Navy recruiter.
Yeah.
So one day during lunch, I just walked in, and then that was it. Yeah. Off I went.
And that's 4 years, right?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then while you were in, they offered you a gig at Annapolis. Is that right?
Yeah. As I went in, I ended up working in a tier one group, you know, development group. They call it research and development. Dev group is the buzzword they'll use today.
Deb?
Dev, D-E-V.
Oh, development. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it was a three-phased volunteer system to get in there. So, you know, like your Navy SEALs or your SF guys got to go through all their rigorous training and stuff. And
yeah.
Guys like me, I just kept raising my hand. So, yeah. So as you passed, I filled out the background stuff just as a joke.
Yeah.
Because I figured it'd be a funny story to tell my brothers.
And
there was about 65 of us, 70 of us. And after you kept turning them in, it was a series of things. It took probably 6 months. And then with the last one, they picked two of us. Uh-huh. And a guy came in the room. He said, hey, you're going to go work in special projects. I don't know where you're going. I don't know what you're going to be doing. Pack your bags. And we left. Yeah. So and that started a 10-year journey that I worked in covert ops the whole time. And,
covert ops?
Yeah.
That's CIA, basically.
Yeah, it was a CIA joint, CIA-NSA platform that was run. And, they were all there, all the players.
So you can't talk about that, though, can you?
Do you know what? I didn't for years. Yeah. It was real comfortable not. Because you run into things like, the clearance that I had was 80 years. Well, I didn't know. It was the first clearance I ever had. I thought that was normal. And
80 years?
Yeah. And what's you talk to other guys, they say, oh, my clearance was 10 years. And then you can talk about it, or 7.
Oh, you had 80 years.
So ours was 80, so I didn't know. I don't know what to say. So I never said anything, yeah. And you just meet a lot of real high-end operators and guys that, because to get to that level,
yeah,
you washed out 90% of the guys that, so it was a real type A group.
Yeah.
It was like a locker room on steroids.
Yeah.
You know, you went, the pejorative term they used in the day, you went out to black sites, you know, around the globe. Indian yeah. country, they would call it.
Yeah.
And but the people you met, like, that's the part that was the most rewarding. There was a bar there that they kind of take the new guys to initiate you.
Where was this?
This was in Northern California.
Yeah.
Yeah, about 40 minutes from San Francisco.
Yeah.
They had a little base out there. It was a little black site. It was called Mare Island. It was you would have drove by it. You wouldn't have noticed. And they ran some programs out of there.
Yeah.
And I went to the bar. They finally took me there. And it was a dark. It was during the day. I couldn't see well. And I heard a thump over my head. And then about 10 minutes later, there was another one. And the bartender yelled at a guy about 40 feet behind me to stop shooting his crossbow, and I turned around. He was shooting up into stuff over our heads in the bar.
Yeah.
And then I saw him at work a couple days later. Oh, yeah. So I mean, it was you ran into some guys that were kind of type A's, and it was a real neat collection of guys. I didn't know till years later. I went to a game and an event in Washington. I happened to be sitting next to the Secretary of the Navy.
Yeah.
And he knew where I worked. I told him where I worked, and he said, "You guys were all handpicked for that."
Oh.
Now we heard stories like that, but I never actually had an official on the Joint Chiefs say that. So that was a weird experience. But
you sent me I guess you did a speaking engagement at St. Cajetan's.
I did,
and it was a quote from Bob. Is his name Gates?
Yeah, he's the old
head of the CIA. Was
yeah, it? And then he was Secretary of Defense. Yeah,
and he said, "I can't talk about it, and Jimmy won't talk about it, but he knows all about it." Something like that.
He was good to me. He's the, you know, the people they have run into. He's the gold bar for management and how to, the ability to see systemically, and his experience with CIA and then at Secretary of Defense. He knew how the system worked. Very smart, very humble, very, you know, when we worked in that business, they told us when you go home, you know, be a good soldier. Everyone's a shoe salesman. That was the term they would use.
Oh, yeah.
So you never wanted to say
anything.
Don't say
anything. Yeah.
And then, so you kind of passed through where you didn't say anything for years, like 15 years.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like you'd go to Washington, a retirement party or something, and you'd leave there, and those guys were talking about some stuff, or somebody wrote a book or somebody.
Yeah.
And then it kind of came out through other stuff. There was a guy that came to town, some author for a book. He was a big shot with the agency, and I took my dad down to meet him. And so it was weird to tell him and see him not understand it. So you pass through, you want to tell someone in the beginning.
Yeah.
Then you pass through a window where you don't.
Yeah.
And then you enjoy the fact that no one knows. It's a weird transition.
You didn't, yeah.
And
yeah.
there were guys around when I was in Vietnam, guys were all still there.
Yeah.
And so the black programs that we worked in, they kind of set the tone. They were very nonchalant, very professional, very, you know, you do your job, you do what you got to do, and then when you're off, it's a total disconnect. It's just everything that happened there is put in a box, and it just stays there. And that was the model that you saw.
And when you got out of the Navy, then you went into it.
I did. I got out of the Navy on a Tuesday, and I started with the contracting with the agency on Wednesday.
Wow.
Yeah, so I just, then I was busy for a while getting used to the new system and how they ran it. They had a black site out there, a couple of them. And then I went back.
What the heck is a black site?
Black site is where you have all the covert
all the spooks.
Stuff, the spooks work, and what you do. And then, so the building has to meet all kinds of certain security requirements. And, you know, it has a skiff, and it has all kinds of, the one room we walked in, it was probably as big as this bar, and it was, you walked into the building, and then it had a giant metal door, and then when you got through that one, it was a vault. The building was an actual safe.
Yeah.
And all the, you had to leave everything out, obviously, and the cords and everything was on skiffs, little bumpers, so nothing could transmit through windows, and it's got white noise, they call it. It shakes the windows so that you can't
pick up any
conversation.
Yeah.
And, you know, you put your chin on the thing, you punch a code, it looks at your face.
Let you in the door.
And then that's how you get in, yeah. So it was high-end stuff at the time. We were way ahead of the curve technology-wise and that stuff. So it was super...
kind of like Maxwell Smart. You remember that?
I do.
And
I did nothing to get there. I'm saying this to tell you, I was the slowest kid on the fastest team.
Yeah.
So these guys were all high-end guys. I did nothing to deserve it. I just kept raising my hand.
But you were a Southsider.
That was the only thing.
Yeah, come on.
You know what? There's one Southside point that jumped out at me.
Oh, yeah?
I was working, and there was a tech guy there that was super tech. He was explaining something. Some op had a technical end that we had to be familiar with. And you had to get assets in place, and it was a big move we were going to do. And this guy was sitting explaining to me how something works. And he was like, you know, on your car, your carburetor does this. And I said, no, I don't know anything about
cars.
And he goes, well, you know, your spark plugs do this or something. I go, I don't know that. And something else he brought up, and he put the paperwork down. I still remember, and he said, how did you get here? What did you do? I said, we drank beer every weekend. I never missed
That's
one.
That's what I did as a
and
kid.
So, yeah.
And I was good
so
at
I think,
it.
I think that you, because you had that, a little of that. They
There's
knew
a
I,
lot of special ops involved in drinking
yes,
beer.
Yes. They knew you weren't going to get out over your skis. They knew, and that was the only real skill I brought to the table. That was it. That's all I always said. It was the only one. So I joined it. No one went in lower than me.
Yeah.
You can't go in lower as a striker. They threaten you in boot camp. So if you flunk out of your school, you're going to be a non-designated striker in the Navy.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, wait a minute. That's what I signed up for.
That's
so,
what I am.
So I ended up there. And then 10, 15 years later, my wife and I got to go to the director of CIA's his retirement party when we left. Yeah. So I was just the spectrum that I saw from engineers to guys that, you know, do a lot of dangerous things to guys that, you know, we stole stuff for 10 years. That's what we did.
Yeah.
And so, you know, guys that went
Secrets.
In harm's way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And went in harm's way by themselves. There was no backup plan. So you had to really have your ducks in a row. But the South Side didn't leave me. The one just talking to you, I remember you forget some. We came back from an op and President Reagan sent some cigars to a guy.
Yeah.
And so a friend of mine was carrying stuff down and we were joking. He said, oh, look at this. It was a box of cigars, and he had signed it to the guy. Well, I had a debate with him. I said, I got to have one of these cigars.
Yeah.
And he said, you can't take a cigar because they're in rows in the box. I said, well, then we'll just take the whole top row.
Yeah.
And this guy was yelling at me. He says, you can't do that. Where the hell are you from? And but still, to me, it made sense. Hey. We can't take one. Take the whole row.
They'll never know.
Yeah. So you just ran into people that were... I was super lucky to be there, super humble, super, these guys were, so your reach and your depth of the worldview just exploded. I went
there
without knowing anything, and then when you're out there and you go to these places and you see the players and the political systems they live under and what people do, it was, to me, that was, that's where everything changed.
Eye-opening.
Everything changed right there.
Now, so, and that's a pretty risky business, but you went from there. Chicago Public Schools, that's pretty risky, too.
I did. I was a little energetic. I was down at the Merck for a little while.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Got a lot of buddies down there.
Yeah. Had some opportunities down there, but it just didn't fit. I didn't see sitting there for the next 20 years. So I went to school at night and got my master's and then got into education. Did that for a dozen years right in the Stockyards area.
Okay.
I left an assistant principal. Well, one story, I was doing my genealogy there. It was a great school, just a lot of energy. The staff was, it was unbelievable. But I was doing my genealogy, and I found out that our family came from Ireland, and they lived at 47th Marshfield.
Yeah.
12 kids. They were all working in the stockyards as laborers.
Yeah.
Right across the street from the room that I was teaching in. 60 years later. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really neat. And I taught the kid who lived in it, so I got to go in the house. I knew
the
family.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was really neat.
Where in Ireland are your folks from?
My father's family is from Clare and Mayo. My mom's from Tyrone. Yeah, she's from the north.
My
his side.
People are from Clare, Kilrush County, Clare.
Yeah, they went through Canada
yeah.
and then came here, yeah. My grandpa, my father's father, was the first one born here in the United States. The other ones were Ireland or Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then you had an opportunity to get on the fire department.
I did, and I figured.
Is there an age cutoff for the, you said you went on when you were 40.
There is now.
Yeah.
There is now. I caught
tail
before that.
It, yeah.
So there should be an asterisk that I made it through, but you really take a lot of Advil and a lot of aspirin to get through there at 40. It's a totally different experience than that. So I just thought teaching was good. It was good to me, but when I was a little kid, that was always, you know, if you grew up here, a cop or fireman.
Oh, yeah, that's the job, yeah.
And that was, it came, and I just kept filling them out, sending it in, thinking I'd never get it, and then I was lucky enough to get the call and take it on at 40.
And on your first day on the job was the LaSalle Bank fire.
It was.
And you got hurt, right?
I did.
Tell us about that.
It was...
That was 2004.
It was a 5/11 alarm, I think,
wow.
Something like that. Oh. One of the biggest ones, and it was right after dinner, and I was at a station at 34th and Calumet, and that came in, and I was new. I barely knew everybody's name still.
Yeah.
And, you know, I knew from my previous work experience that if you don't know what to do, just, you know, do the bitch work part. You know, when I was new, checked into that tier one program, you just know there's a hierarchy and you do the bad, you do the dirty work.
Oh.
Same thing at Firehouse. I'm 40. I get the system. I'm going to do that. So I'm washing dishes and all that. And we get a call and, we go down there. And I remember looking up, seeing it, thinking, what is, we're probably not going to go up there.
It's on the 26th really floor or something like that.
It's 29th floor, yeah.
And there's flames flying out the windows.
There was. There was glass falling, and I just kept thinking, oh, there's no way we're going up there. I'm good. And and then in the lobby, it was Roscoe was standing there, and he just...
Oh, the commissioner.
Yeah. I don't know if he was. He might have been at the time.
Yeah.
And they just turned, and we just happened to be standing in the wrong spot. He just said, you guys go up. So
you guys go up the stairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we took the stairs and then
all that equipment on.
Get above it. And by the time we had gotten there, it was going a while. And I remember the carpet near where it was going, there was water getting on it too, and it was bubbling already. So it was steam coming up already. And then we had to go up and down some stairwells, and I'm not gonna lie, it was my first day. I had no idea where I was what I was doing. I had no clue.
I was so new.
That I remember there was a window open, and I looked down, and it was coming up from the floor above, catching some curtains, and I remember saw it across the room, and I thought, man, somebody should do something about that. Swear to God, I still remember that. Man, somebody should get that. Then we had to go up and down some stairs, and then it was a hallway, a stairwell that we got to go. It was the only way I can describe it, it was like a dragon was in this doorway, just blowing
fire,
flame out. So we had to run by real quick to go up the stairs.
Oh.
And later on, we went back there a couple months later. They took us back there, and that door that I thought was gone, it was a regular door, but it had that glass that was only about that big. You know those windows they have in little doors,
yeah.
And that was the only thing that was, and that much flame was coming out of there. I thought the whole door was gone.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't even, I was lost. I was scared. My face mask stuck on my face in the hall, in the stairs.
Oh.
And we were up above it, and it got really hot.
Yeah.
And so, so the first thing you do is you take your mask off, you rip it off.
Yeah.
And you know, and then I went down. I thought I was okay. We got called down. Some chief saw me, and he's like, "You guys got to go that way." And so, the guy fell, he got hurt. You know, a lot of it was still sketchy.
You had smoke inhalation.
Yeah, it was just happening too fast. So I went down, and I thought I was okay, you know.
Yeah.
And then I didn't know, because you can't see yourself, but evidently you're all black, you know. You're just taller. And the medics saw me, and then he sat down, "How do you feel?" And I said, you know, It was. I just said, I feel fine. I just said, my throat's a little raw. I just need some water. So we go to the hospital, and the guy in the ER there, the doctor there, I remember he could have had more tact, a little better approach, but I got in there, and he's just looking at me, and then he said, hey, I'm going to intubate you, or you're going to die.
Ooh, wow.
That's when every orifice in your body just goes, whoop, just shrinks up real tight.
Yeah.
I saw him later. I thought, you got to work on your approach a little better. But so then I woke up.
Intubate means they stick a tube down your throat. Is that what it is?
They did, yeah. And then I was out, I don't know.
You get oxygen.
Two and a half days, yeah.
And so you're out cold for 2 or 3 days?
Yeah, it was two and a half days.
Yeah.
And then they do that, so you're, you know, ironically, Herbie Johnson, who we all know,
he had
the same thing. He said almost the same words as I did several years ago, almost the same thing, exact layout. And his, they didn't get soon enough, so
yeah.
A horrible ending, but... But then when you come out of it, you it's a real slow thing. You kind of hear things, but you don't know what's going on yet. Then one of the first things I saw is my brothers, who are, they have a lot of issues. But they wrote on the wall above my head, it said, Big Fires 1, Gym 0. So they painted my toenails.
They did?
Yeah.
Well, you're out cold?
Yeah, they did. Very clever. As a principal, I gave them all detention.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
But, so you wake up and see that and look at your toes.
Yeah.
And then now, how old were your kids at this time?
They were little, 4 or 5.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
They were small, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was my wife's first day, obviously, and then she gets the call to go there. And then.
Oh, my God. Your first day?
Yeah, my parents, they took down there and everything.
Oh, wow.
I'm obviously not aware of any of that, but there's a whole thing that they kick in when stuff like that happens.
Sure.
They're good at that. They really are. They got that down.
Who's they?
The fire department.
Oh,
they
okay.
are.
Yeah.
They take care of, you know. And then what I do enjoy, and that's what guys chase on the fire department, is the guys that I worked with in the military and for the government were the danger and the risk you do add, and the hardship add and forge a friendship and a understanding that you just don't get.
Yeah.
You know, I have friends for life that I talk to still, and guys went on and did great things, lawyers and bosses. But the fire department is the closest thing, and the police department I've seen, where there's a threat of that there.
Yeah.
If you get a house with, you know, 5, 6 guys that are just working guys and get it, it's a total joy to go to work.
Yeah.
And I've been lucky enough to have that happen in my career a couple times, and it's super...
And then right after that, there was another fire, the Pilgrim Baptist Church, a year later. Tell me about that. The roof collapsed?
That was one on Indiana, yeah. And there's a video there of a guy who was pulled from a window right as it took off, and he was literally seconds from getting cooked in there.
Yeah.
And I was still in there when the roof came down. It trapped him on one side, and we had to run to the back of that, and I was running with a guy, and it was real crowded, and there were books there and junk, and we were up about 50 feet, and if you fell over this little railing, you were going to fall down, so you had to move, but you couldn't go really fast, and then the stairs.
You can't see and everything.
Yeah, we just took a header down the stairs, and I made it all the way down to the bottom, and then at the back door was open. That's the only reason I knew it was there. It was the first time I used a shim. I took a shim out of my helmet and stuck it in the door and left it open. I have no idea why.
Yeah.
I came back and fell all the way down the floor, and my face was, and I looked and over, and that's all you could see was that much room right out in the alley. And then a guy showed up, some guy showed up, and they pull you out of here, and then, you know, you just start throwing up. That's kind of what I do.
Wow.
And I throw up a lot. But, it was a year later, so my wife gets the call again. Then back, I tore some discs and ruptured a couple, and... So I sat on a rig outside, and it was cold, and I sat there for about 20 minutes resting, and then I couldn't get up. You know, everything just locked up. So so it took me a while to get off of there, and then I had some back issues. So my wife got a second phone call.
Wow.
So she dealt with that, yeah. And the big chief that met her that day, he's like, no, this is literally the last time now. She said, you told me that before. So she's, you know, she went through a lot of that, and I had 2 kids. I have 3 sons, and when I was working, you know, one of the legacies of all that work is just virtually everybody I know is divorced. You know, you go on a lot. It's you live out of a bag.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I always just tell you, you know, if you come home from work, when I was working for government on a Tuesday, if I leave for work and home for dinner, I'm home, obviously. But if I'm not, she understood that you could be gone anywhere from 2 weeks to 3 months.
Wow.
So it's a real hard family dynamic goes on there. Wife's got to be super strong. She lived through that.
Yeah.
Then I had the fire department. And then I had a year where I had a son in Iraq.
Oh,
and then
your
a second
in
year.
Iraq.
So we had 2 years in a row.
That's right. All three of your boys were in the service, right?
Yeah, one's still in.
Wow.
My older son was with the 10th Mountain. He was a sniper with them, and he was there. And my youngest one went first. He was there for a year, and then my older one. So I saw it as a young man, you want to take all those risks and do all that. But I lived long enough to see that when you're older, it's a totally different experience.
Yeah.
I
and
ate,
you were worried about
that. I
them.
Ate through a lot of worry. I ate through a lot of that.
Yeah.
Put on some weight. But it's totally different dynamic. The kids want to go.
Yeah.
They want to get out and do all that. I never pushed it. Never did it on. I never pushed it. They just went and did it on their own. So they had a good experience. You know, they had a good run over there. And now two of them are out.
That's good.
And one's still in, yeah.
And where's he at?
He's stationed with, he's with 25th ID, they call. He's stationed in a real horrible spot, Hawaii.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I've read that in here.
Schofield Barracks over there, yeah. So one was with the 10th Mountain and one was with the 101st Airborne.
Now, what firehouse are you out of now?
Now I'm in logistics, yeah. My back, they have
you're like
the guys that handle all that.
Oh.
Yeah, because my back was starting to go and it was a spot where you don't get beat up as much.
Yeah.
We're getting that age. You go to a good fire and you come out and you look at these kids. You're like, well, man, wait, I'm getting too old for this. This kid looks like he's 18, you know.
Yeah.
So my body kind of checked out and I had other issues, you know, working before and that just compounded here. They all kind of backed up. So I just, it's tough.
Well, that's good though.
Yeah. Oh, it's great they got
out of
these
harm's
spots.
Way.
It's great they got these spots. I'm very humbled.
Yeah.
They're very thankful.
Yeah.
They're good guys. You know, even there's good guys there. We got great camaraderie there. It's, you know, again, I'm super lucky to work.
How
with
much
those
longer
guys.
Do you think you're gonna stay?
Three to four, somewhere in there.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah. Probably three. We'll see what happens.
You're still kind of a young guy. How old are you?
57.
You
don't
mind.
Yeah. So thanks.
You've been through it, man.
But 57 here next month, next week. Actually,
oh,
couple weeks,
good for
yeah,
you.
So.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. So,
So the boys all grew up and then went in the service and everything. Holy cow.
Yeah, yeah. And then one got on the job. My oldest is Chicago fireman.
Yeah.
Because they're looking, they're hiring.
Oh, he's also a fireman. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's good. They look for the family kind of a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and the veteran now. These industries and these companies are real good with veterans. If you get an extra point and
they
stuff like that,
be.
They're looking
to
hire them. Yeah. So it's good, yeah.
Do you know Pat Kwan?
I do.
Pat's a friend of ours.
Oh, he's a great guy.
He's been on the show
great
a couple
guy.
Of times. Yeah,
Pat's
and
great.
His dad was a fireman, Lips Kwan. We're trying to get him on the show.
Oh yeah. Pat's good people.
Yeah,
yeah.
He is a terrific young man. So, one of the things we do this show for is to salute our first responders because we think they're the modern day equivalent of our mythological Irish warriors, and indeed you are, Jimmy Gorman. So we wanted to let you know how much we admire you and are proud of you, an young Irish American doing your thing. What do you think you'll do after you retire?
Do you know, I had some options. There was some other contract work that's out there that I had feelers in, and some other speaking things, some other people I know.
Yeah, you'd be good at that.
Going
now,
on.
What was the thing for at St. Cajun's? Was it a fundraiser?
I had done some for some companies. I kind of dabbled in it.
Okay.
I kept it separate. I didn't want to do it here.
Yeah.
Keep it separate, but I'm just kind of rolling with it now. I had a good thing going. I got an insurance network where they insure hospitals. And some work there with a real dynamic guy, Tim McDonald, you got to have to get him, a big patient safety advocate who's in the nation, known as, he's from here. Great guy. And
Southsider?
He is.
Oh, good.
He is. Good people, yeah. And his he's in it, and he's, hey, I got in the loop there where I did a couple small ones, and a guy in one of them said, hey, can I get you? So I've been to Ohio, I've been to California a couple times. Yeah. I've been to Kentucky, I've been to.
And what's the theme of your
I kind of do, it's mixed in with leadership, challenges facing companies, kind of Cold War, kind of world today, what's going on today, some of that stuff, kind of mix that. Still finding my way, you know.
Well, speaking of the world today, what the hell's going on? I'm just amazed how screwed up things are.
I get it.
I don't want to get political on you, but my God. And one of the things we were doing the show last summer, we said we got to do just cops because when they were talking about defunding the police, that's nuts. That's crazy talk.
It is. And you see when the herd gets going, you know, oftentimes they can be wrong. I mean, you just saw Minneapolis, I think, today. Did you see that?
No. What happened?
They affirmed $6.5 million for their policing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now they realize, all right, wait a minute, this might not have been a good thing to do. And you know, everyone thinks they live in the craziest time. As a history minor guy, we've been through this.
When you mentioned Minneapolis, I thought maybe they were naming a stadium after George Floyd or something like that.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I don't know. But they're funding
him
now, you know.
This guy's a bum.
They're funding him, so they're trying to get the police, I think, you know.
They should be.
Yeah. So.
And what about your wife now? What is she doing?
She's a teacher in Evergreen Park here.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep. She's got one more school year left, and then she can bail, yeah.
No, so you grew up and you were in Cajun. So you went to Rita from Cajun.
I did.
How come you didn't go to Carmel? Where did Joe go?
Joe went to Rita.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Three of us went to Rita. Two went to Carmel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Two of your brothers went to Carmel.
Yeah. So out of five of us, we're even. That's what I call it. That's my math, right?
Okay.
But, real lucky. Still keep in touch with a bunch of high school friends. It was great. Great experience. You can't replicate that, right? Going to schools here.
You're not kidding.
Just great group of guys.
No pal like an old pal.
Yep. Super lucky.
We want to get your brother Joe on the show. So would you?
You
talk
should.
To him?
Joe's got a lot of real world experiences. Yeah. He's got a lot of.
This has been great. Thank you, Jimmy.
Oh, hope Gorman. That helped.
Good luck to you. Stay safe. Don't go in any more burning buildings, you know.
We're going to try not to.
And you're right here in the neighborhood,
yep.
huh?
Right.
Oh,
10th,
good.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well, God bless you. Thank you for your service, pal.
Oh, don't sweat it. Thank you for the time.
Okay, pal. God bless you. All right, we're going to be right back on Hibernian Radio for these messages from our friends.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
On the death walk of saloons that decorate Western Avenue, only the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, the soul of Beverly, sits right on a 50-yard line of Chicago's Southside Irish St. Patrick's Day Parade at 106th and Western. Generations of Southside Irish have quenched their thirst in the Cork, snuggling up to memories of family, faith, and fierce loyalty to friends. It's the jewel of this neighborhood where we celebrated weddings, christenings, wakes, and unforgettable victories. Proprietors Bill Guidy and Mike Fitzpatrick, now celebrating 20 years in business, welcome you home for a cold brew, to share a good story, or help you throw one hell of a party. With over 20 beers on tap and a full bar for your pleasure, this is the spot you can sink a root and get your Irish on. Cork has plenty of seating, from our private event rooms to our 300-person beer garden. Our interior space brings you back to the homeland of Ireland with our vintage photos and authentic Irish decor and Chicago memories of the good old days. So say hello to a stranger, make a new friend, fall in love, or just enjoy the company of people you forgot you knew. The Cork and Kerry continues the Southside tradition parents and grandparents brought here from the old country. Come on by the Cork and Kerry and get some. The Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, 10614 Southwestern Avenue, for private parties, just pals hanging out, or intimate cocktail rendezvous. Come on home to the south side of Chicago at the Cork and Kerry.
And we're back. Mike on Hibernian Radio. Hey, that was great. Thank you, Jimmy Gorman. A gent, I might add. He is Gentleman Jimmy. And just great stories. So thanks to him and his family and all of his friends for coming down here tonight. You know, I'd like to give a little shout out to Jose, my Uber driver tonight. I got in the car and I said, you know where we're going, right? And he went, yeah. And that's the last word in English he spoke to me. And I had kind of a wild ride with Jimmy and Jose. Anyway, I'll write a story about old Jose someday. I want to remind everybody we are having a huge party here Wednesday, March 17th. Don't know who the guest is. Maybe it'll be Joe Gorman. But we'll have some Irish first responder on the show. And right after the show, the Great Irish Whiskey Project, great band with John Shine and a whole bunch of guys is coming. They're going to be playing. And then Jimmy Clunan and friends, his brother, maybe his dad and some other guys. And Jimmy Conway, he's bringing Jimmy Conway, the great mouth organ guy, the harmonica player. He's terrific. And then Tyke Spillane is going to do some dancing. And then we're going to have the Garda pipes and drums do some stuff. So it's going to be a great night of Irish entertainment. Great crack. Because there's no parade and, you know, we're going to do it here. We're going to do it here for you. And we're not charging you. You pay for your own drinks. But come on by and join us. We'd love to have you join us to celebrate being Irish. And that's on St. Patrick's Day. And then at 10 o'clock on St. Patrick's Day, WTTW is going to rebroadcast my show, Our Irish Pub, starring the lovely, the talented, the vivacious Katie Grennan, Irish fiddler. But we are at we taped a segment here at Cork and Kerry. We taped one at Mrs. Murphy's Bistro, and we final spot was at the Curra on Northwest Highway. It was a terrific show, and we had done it the year before, but this one really came together, so you're going to love it. It's a half hour of great Irish entertainment, Wednesday, March 17th at 10 p.m., and previous to our show is Patty Homan's show, I Am Ireland. And if you haven't seen that, do yourself a favor. It's a terrific show, the history of Ireland in song and story by Patty Homan. Just a terrific show. So we got all that coming up. Also, don't forget to tune into the Hooli's Hooli right after this show every Saturday night from 8 to 9 on WSBC 1240 and on the podcast, HibernianRadio.org. Also want to announce, just set the dates for our 7th annual Irish American Movie Hooli Film Festival at the Gene Siskel Film Center, September 24th, 25th, and 26th in Chicago, right on State Street, 164 North State Street, the Gene Siskel Film Center, the greatest indie house in town. And we're coming back. We're going to have three terrific Irish films. I just watched one the other day, if we can swing that. We'd love to have you join us. It's a great weekend of Irish film, and you can meet the filmmakers and sometimes the actors. And the Hilton has been very good to us. They usually put them up at the hotel, and we're going to Patty's Irish Whiskey sponsor us and the Chicago Community Trust, and it's a great, great weekend in Chicago, September 24th, 25th, and 26th, the 7th annual Irish American Movie Hooli. And I'm wondering, you know, we didn't have a 6th one, it was canceled, but so we can call this the 7th one, 7th year in a row. So you got all that coming up, and then I'd also like to say, you know, Billy, whenever I'm walking down Western Avenue, I look in the window of Ken's, Wrong's, Hart's, Cork and Kerry, or any of those great Irish saloons. I see the ghost of my old pal Jimmy Goff through the mist, and he says to me, "Hey, Hooli, who died?" Mary Elizabeth Kilroy, beloved wife of the late Joe for 57 years, devoted daughter of the late Ed and Mary Spellman, loving mother of Pat, Mike, Sheila, Joe, Jerry, Ed, Siobhan, and Kevin. Quite a lady. Marie Elizabeth Kilroy. God rest her soul. Also, Eleanor P. Lynch, knee laden, 91 of Palos Hills. Beloved wife to the late Patrick Noel Lynch. Loving mother to Sheila, Eileen, Jack, Patrick, Mary, and Brian. Eleanor had a deep love for Ireland, which she expressed by her frequent travels back to the home she kept there, where she spent time visiting with family and friends. That's a nice setup, like a home in Ireland. Say a prayer for Eleanor P. Lynch at 91. God rest her soul. James Robert Higgins, only 62, passed away peacefully due to complications following heart surgery. Surrounded by his family, survived by his wife, soulmate of 33 years, Cheryl. His sons J.R. and Ben and his daughter Megan. He's a fun, crazy uncle to numerous, his nieces and nephews, and friend to many. Anyone that knew Jim also knew he was a quick wit with a great joke, quick to make a friend, and quick to help anybody who asked. God rest his lovely soul, Jim Higgins. And finally, Edward Ted Shilney, a retired detective from the Chicago Police Department, also a U.S. Army veteran, age 87. He's the beloved husband of the late Mary Babe Shilney and the father of Laura, Kathy, and Edward. Terrific guy, Ted Shilney, Chicago police officer. And he was waked, and funeral arrangements were handled by Sheehy, where all the right people go. Okay, you know what? One thing I forgot to do during the break, I forgot to order the pizza from Fox's. So we're going to take a break, and I'm going to do that, and we'll be right back after these messages from our friends. With a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150. When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy and Sons Funeral Homes are third generation, family owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. The Robert J. Sheehy and Sons Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this was one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind and was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of service is evident 98 years later, as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. At Sheehy's, the name on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family. And you know, you never forget something like that. Their entire staff cares about each and every family they serve. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike LaRock, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves on offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy and Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
Southsiders have always known where to get the best pizza on earth, Fox's Pizza. For over a half century, the Fox family has been creating that delicious thin crust za that your mouth will tell you, this can only be Fox's. It's a Chicago Beverly institution at 99th and Western, as well as in Orland Park, where they combine delicious food with an Irish pub ambiance. You got the best of both worlds. Still owned by Tom and Frank Fox, whose mom and dad, Frank and Teresa, bought the Western location from Al Capone's sister back in 1964. They opened the doors in Orland at 73 at 143rd and Ravinia Avenue. You'll recognize the stone turrets of their Irish castle, whose great times have been celebrated for generations of Chicagoland Irish. Fox's is perfect for the whole family, pickup or delivery, or you can dine in, relax, and have a cocktail with your dinner, whether it's steak, ribs, chicken, or especially pizza. It's all good. Having a party? Fox's also does catering. Call Fox's in Beverly at 773-239-3212 or in Orland Park at 708-349-2111. They're proud sponsors of Hibernian Radio and all Irish first responders. Mention this show for a free toothpick. Gotta love that Fox's pizza.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
I was 18 years old when I went down to Dublin with a fistful of money and a cartload of dreams. Take your time, says a father, stop rushing like hell and remember all's not what it seems to be. For there's fellas who'd cut you for the coat on your back or that watch that you got from your mother. So take care, me young bucko, and mind yourself well, and would you give this wee note to me, brother? At the time, Uncle Benji was a policeman in Brooklyn, and me father, the youngest, looked after the farm. And a phone call from America said, send the lad over, and the old fella said, sure wouldn't do any harm. For I spent my life working this dirty old ground for a few pints of porter and the smell of a pound. And sure, maybe there's something you'll learn or you'll see, and you can bring it back home, make it easier on me. So I landed at Kennedy, and a big yellow taxi carried me and me back through the streets and the rain. Well, me poor heart was thumping around with excitement, and I hardly even heard what the driver was saying. We came in the Shore Parkway through the flatlands in Brooklyn to me uncle's apartment on East 53rd. I was feeling so happy, I was humming a song, and I sang, you're as free as a bird. Well, the short in the story, what I found out that day was that Benji got shot down in an uptown foray. And while I was flying my way to New York, poor Benji was lying in a cold city morgue. Well, I phoned up the old fella, told him the news. I could tell he could hardly stand up in his shoes. And he wept as he told me, go ahead with the plan, and not to forget, be a proud Irish man. So I went up to Nellie's beside Fordham Road, and I started to learn about lifting me low. But the heaviest thing that I carried that year was the bittersweet thoughts of my hometown so dear. I went home that December 'cause the old fella died. I had to borrow the money from a fella on the side. And all the bright flowers and brass couldn't hide the poor wasted face of me father. I sold off the old farmyard for what it was worth, and into me bag stuck a handful of earth. And I boarded a train and I caught me a plane, and I found myself back in the U.S. again. It's been 22 years since I set foot in Dublin. My kids know to use the correct knife and fork. But I'll never forget the green grass and the rivers as I keep law and order in the streets of New York. Na na na.
Hey, welcome back to Hibernian Radio. Another great night here at the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, and another great interview with the great Jimmy Gorman. And Frankie Moran is in the house, another Chicago fireman. So great to be here. I want to, you know, one of the reasons we did the start of this show in the direction that we did is that our culture is changing and it's getting kind of scary. And there used to be a thing online called Second City Cop. And I know you police officers tuned in. I used to love reading it. But they've been shut down. Call it whatever you want. Censorship. Or it's an attack on free speech, whatever. It's all big tech and everything. But I miss it, and I'm sure you guys did too. It was a very entertaining kind of gossip sheet on Chicago police and politics at large in Chicago. And it's you hate to see something like that get crushed under the heels of the big tech. But they put out a statement. I won't get into the whole thing, but in closing, they wanted to thank a few people, including Phil Klein, who was... He banned. They were banned from department computers, but it jumped to 3,000 visits today, over 30,000 unique daily visits for Second City Cop. They also want to thank HeyJackass.com, which is the crime numbers, the stats for the homicides every day. And when I wrote my book, Nothing's on the Square, what a big help that was. The rap sheet every day. How many people were shot? How many people were killed? How many people were arrested every single day? I hope they're still in business. Second City Cop also salutes CWB Blog. Tells them you're reporting what should be in Chicago. We don't know your operation, if it's phone calls or emails or actually feet on the street. But you do more to create informed citizens than major newspapers and broadcast citizens. And I'll go along with that, too. Then they also go out of their way to thank the chaplains. Father Brandt, Father Dan Brandt, has done and continues to do God's work. It's the only police charity we contribute to because we know exactly where every dollar is going. And there isn't a finer man of God alive than Rabbi Wolf. So when we hear he's in the building around the district or on a crime scene, we're getting a handshake and our candy. Anyway, they also wanted to thank their readers. Look this up. See if you can find the statement from the Second City Cop. It's a shame, and I hope they do come back. But things are scary. It's scary out there, folks. And speaking of scary, let's take a little trip down a place I like to call Hula Town.
Deep, south side of Chicago.
Get me out of here.
So deep. All the way up to 93rd Street.
Get me out of here, please.
Across the tracks. where they only spoke Yaki Dak.
Oh.
And the people barely survived on a strict diet of crunchy bouncer and bamboo.
Hey, man, you want another drink?
Yes.
Huh? Can I get you two?
This yeah. is almost 70 years we're talking.
70
when
years?
The what? His teeth,
oh.
Something entered his cranium.
His cranium?
And wormed around his frontal lobes oh. and took him to a state of mind.
Mind.
Hidden place on the other side of bunkers.
Welcome.
A crazy, silly, screwy.
Have a seat.
Known as... Hoolytown.
Hoolytown.
Welcome to Hoolytown. Don't stay too long, though.
How come?
Because you might not come back. Welcome to Hoolytown.
Why, thank you.
And you're welcome.
Yeah, welcome to Hoolytown, everybody. This first joke is special thanks to Tim Burns, the secretary of the Emerald Society, and each week he sends me a lovely little story, and I like this one. The teacher gave her fifth grade class an assignment. Get their parents to tell them a story with a moral at the end of it. The next day, the kids came back, and one by one, they began to tell their stories. There were all the regular types of stuff, spilled milk, pennies saved, blah, blah, blah. But then the teacher realized, much to her dismay, that only Janie was left. Janie, she asked, do you have a story to share? Yes, ma'am. My daddy told me a story about my mommy. She was a Marine pilot in Syria, and her plane got hit. She had to bail out over enemy territory, and all she had were a flask of whiskey, a pistol, and a survival knife. She drank the whiskey on the way down in case the bottle broke, and her parachute landed her right in the middle of 20 ISIS troops. She shot 15 of them with a pistol until she ran out of bullets. She killed four more with a knife. Till the blade broke, and then she killed the last ISIS fighter with her bare hands. Good heavens, said the horrified teacher. What did your daddy tell you was the moral of this horrible story? Stay away from mommy when she's been drinking. Okay. Now, you know what's funny? I do miss Betty Lorraine Maltese. She used to have the greatest, and they were slightly risque jokes, but I haven't talked to her in a while, so I have to go back and find that gold mine of jokes that Betty used to have. But here's some other ones I picked up. A journalist assigned to Jerusalem Bureau takes an apartment overlooking the Wailing Wall. Every day when she looks out, she sees an old Jewish man praying vigorously. One morning, she goes down and introduces herself to the old man. She asks, you come here every day to the wall. How long have you done that, and what are you praying for? The old man replies, I have come here to pray every day for 25 years. This is my Jewish accent guy. In the morning, I pray for world peace, and then for the brotherhood of men. I go home, have a cup of tea, and I come back and pray for the eradication of illness and disease from the earth. The journalist is amazed. How does it make you feel to come here every day for 25 years and pray for those things, she asks. The old man looks at her sadly and says, like I am talking to a wall. Okay. Oh, well, one more before we go. An elementary school class goes on a field trip to the police station. At the station, it offers points to the 10 most wanted list and tells the children that these are the most dangerous and wanted fugitives in the USA. Little Johnny looks at the wall of mugshots, points to a particularly scary-looking individual, and asks, he's the most wanted in the USA? The officer replies, yes. And the kid says, well, why didn't you keep him when you took his picture? And that's all we got, folks. What another great night. Hey, you know what? Who do we have next week? I can tell you. I can pull out the calendar right here. Mike Brady! Cook County Sheriff's Office, and Billy Brady, the comedian's brother, and an old pal. Okay, so stick around. Join us next week. We'd love to have you. We're just waiting for our Fox's Pizza, and we're looking forward to that. And don't forget our party on St. Patrick's Day. Please join us. It ain't going to cost you anything. Just pay for your drinks. So we will see you later. Bye.
See how far I was from God. And I buckled up my shoes. And then I started walking, and I started walking. Oh, I started walking. I just buckled up my shoes.